This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
This week on the program, the Oregon Ducks season comes to an end with a loss to the Ohio State Buckeyes in the Rose Bowl in the quarterfinals of the college football playoff. We unpack it all. The program starts now. Welcome into the program, Dusty Hera, Cole Linehan, and the Oregon Ducks are 13-1. A loss in the college football playoff quarterfinal to Ohio State, 41-21 in the Rose Bowl. Not the game we were envisioning, not the way that any Duck fans were hoping this thing would end.
No, we have fortunately had 13 straight weeks of coming in here and talking about how great we played or maybe even sneaking away with a win. This is a different feeling. This is a feeling that we have not had in a while. You know, it's a 41-21 loss, but it feels more like a 40-0 loss to me. I mean, it's one of those deals where we did kind of scrape it back, but, man, just the way that Ohio State came out, the way Ohio State beat us all over the board is a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, it was quick, early, and often. I mean, I don't think that anybody envisioned the game to play out the way that it did, especially, you know, the 34-0 lead in the first half, Oregon not getting on the board until the final drive of the first half, or truly the way that the game started. That three-play drive to start the game, where we had talked about this when we recapped the Ohio State-Tennessee game, right? It looked like Chip Kelly was back in his bag. They were throwing the smoke screens. All of those plays, we were like, how in the world is Jeremiah Smith so wide open down the field? It felt like we were watching Jeffrey Mayle, right? Yeah. We talked about that after the Tennessee game. Well, Chip got even deeper into his bag because all of those smoke screens, the bubble screens that made Chip Kelly's offense so dangerous, what was the very first play of the game? They fake a bubble screen out to the outside. The tight end is leaking out like he's going to kick out the corner. He just takes it right up the sideline, and boom, the very first play of the game was a wrinkle of Chip Kelly's offense. And after that, they didn't look back, man. That offense was operating at an insane level and rhythm.
Yeah, we talk about that with quarterbacks, right? Like, it takes them some time. If they're into a system to begin with, it takes them some time to kind of figure it out. Well, you know, it takes Chip some time to get his offense going. He's only been here for this year, right? He was a head coach at UCLA last year, and now he comes over. He puts in his offense. He starts doing his thing. And I said it a couple weeks ago. Well, I said it last week. When they lost to Michigan, I guarantee Chip got into those meeting rooms and said, This is my deal now. Like, I am taking over. This is going to be.
I am the captain now.
Yeah, we are doing things my way because that the way they play offense, the way that they're playing offense right now is just has Chip Kelly's handprints all over it.
Three plays, 75 yards, 1 minute, 6 points.
Yes,
that was the opening drive of the game. And look, for as good as Chip's offense was, I thought, you know, maybe we would be seeing Oregon's offense punch right back and play very similarly. it was three-play touchdown to three-play punt on the other side. And Oregon's offense couldn't get up off the mat, and I think that is a great credit to this Ohio State defense as well, because we'll get into the depths of both sides of the football and what went right and what went wrong. But Ohio State's defense as well. Oregon's offensive line said this last week. They played flawlessly against Ohio State that first time around. And I didn't think they would need to play flawlessly in this game because, you know, guys like Jordan Burch being back and you know, some steps that have been taken forward in different position groups. But I don't think anybody thought they would see eight sacks coming in the dominance to a man that Ohio State brought.
Yeah, and that's something also we spoke about last week is we're going to find out a lot about how this game's going to go in the first quarter just based on the fronts we see and how they approach us defensively and how we're approaching them defensively, right? And if you would have told me that Ohio State was going to have three down linemen and get home eight times, I would have thought you were a liar. Or I would have thought that we were the ones that were losing our left tackle and our center, right? But and for us to not be able to get home, not even close, and for them to just tee off on our QB, I mean, that was that's what we talked about, right? We have to get to Howard to make sure that he cannot hit his spots. Well, guess what? We couldn't get to Howard, and he hit all of the damn spots.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, when you have a receiver like Smith that is as NFL-ready as you will ever find a freshman receiver, just have a game like he did with, you know, seven catches for 187 and two touchdowns. I mean, and everybody in the nation knows how good he is. And of course we did. You know, we're going to give the coaches credit. They knew, you know, where he was at all times, but we couldn't cover him. No. And, you know, on the other side, if you can't protect your quarterback and he can't get free and run, I mean, there's problems all over the board.
Yeah, let's start with Ohio State's offense then and what went wrong for Oregon's defense, because that's the way the game started, right? We talked about the first play. They faked that bubble screen, and the tight end wheels up the field. The very next play was an incompletion to Jeremiah Smith, but had Will Howard wanted to, he could have tucked the ball and ran for several yards. Mm-hmm. And then the third play goes for a long touchdown where I think it was something that we kind of saw throughout the course of the last two games for Ohio State, where if you have that too high safety look, and this is something that Chip Kelly schemed up very well, but also it comes down to having elite players. And Emeka Egbuka and Jeremiah Smith were the two guys that were really bringing it home to Oregon all day long.
Yeah.
And Will Howard played an amazing game, and he played outstanding. I think the biggest change between Will Howard from when the Ducks played him in October to where the Ducks played him on January 1st was just the comfort to say, I'm going to throw the ball to my guys and trust they're going to get it. Mm-hmm. He was almost like pulling a string back in October on that ball and being like, I want to trust him, but I'm not going to. No, he just went full send. And he said, these guys are going to go and get the damn ball. And they did. But onto the scheme part, this is what Chip Kelly does, right?
Yeah.
He tries to leverage you in the run game, but he also tries to leverage you in the pass game by saying, giving an eye candy to a safety, pulling him up, and then just throwing the ball right to where he was with a player coming back over the top. And look, Dan Lanning fell on the sword and said, we didn't have our guys ready to play. We all knew number four was going to be a player in that game. The coaching staff, as you said, give them credit. They knew number four was going to be a guy. If you're talking about the guys you need to stop, number four, number two, pretty high on that list Ohio State, right? And that's Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Egbuka. It was those who want to criticize the scheme because Dan Lanning has opened himself up to doing it and saying, nope, I'm going to take the heat for it. As coaches, we need to do better. There's also, to a man, Ohio State was better, and they were winning the battles, whether it was on the line of scrimmage, whether it was in the back end. It was everywhere. Ohio State dominated that football game against Oregon.
Yeah, I mean, I get what Coach Lennon's doing. You know, he needs to fall on the sword for his guys. That goes a long ways in the locker room. But Ohio State was clearly better than us everywhere on the football field. You know, sitting in the stands, you just felt like things were getting out of hand so quick, and there was nothing that we could do. You know, if we can't run the football like we did, and you just see all these wide open receivers and just how athletic they are and how talented they are. I mean, all year they've said this is the best roster in college football.
No doubt about it.
The highest paid roster, the best roster, whatever you want to put it. Well, they showed up, and they had a wake up call against Michigan, and they have not. I mean, won't last, but gosh, they look like the best team in college football, and I don't think it's close.
Yeah, really do.
It's, you know, it is. Oh man,
I've said for months that, you know, going back to when I saw their spring game, I said, no, that's the most talented roster in college football. And there are teams that were close, and Oregon was one of them too. Texas is another one that is very close. Who they will play in the Cotton Bowl, you know, this week, they are close. But that Ohio State team, top to bottom, it's as talented as they get, and it's not just the guys that they got in the transfer portal. It's some of the guys, you know, outside of Jeremiah Smith, a guy who played out of his mind, is another true freshman, Edric Houston, this is a true freshman who pressured Dylan Gabriel four times. He was like a menace in the backfield. He's number 96 if you're watching the game. But they have Jack Sawyer. They have JT Tuimoloau. They have the Williams in the middle. They are loaded up front. And then here comes this true freshman who found his big boy muscles since October.
Yeah.
And those guys made their presence felt after not, you know, really being a factor in October in Autzen Stadium. This looked like a different team. Ryan Day had alluded to this to guys like Joel Klatt of saying, you know, they're treating this year more like an NFL season where you roll things out over the course of the year. And that's kind of from that October meeting to the January 1st game in the Rose Bowl. It did seem like, you know, when you watch the Kansas City Chiefs early in the year and you're like, why aren't you throwing the ball to Travis Kelce?
Yeah.
You know, where's Travis Kelce at?
Yeah.
What's wrong with Patrick Mahomes? And you're just kind of rolling out the offense. You're going through some growing pains saying, you know what we know we have? We know we have number 87 Travis Kelce, right? And we don't need to go to that well too early. But when it comes to winning time, when it comes to late in the year, who gets better at the end of the year? Travis Kelce does. He starts getting his touches. You start seeing they go back to that well over and over again. And that's the way Ohio State kind of played this season. The Michigan game is inexplicable. Yeah. It really is. That is the massive outlier because they didn't try to lose that game as a motivator so they would get rolling for the college football playoff. That one was truly a mystery. These last two games, this has looked every bit of the team we thought they would be heading into this year.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot to why they do it the NFL style, because this is also the most games we've ever played in a season, right?
Yep.
Like, they have to play it this way. They can't just, you know, it's not as sustainable to have a guy like Genty for Boise State where you're giving him the ball 30 times a game.
No doubt about it.
Like, there is a process that you have to do, and college teams that see themselves in the college football player have to think this way. And they have done a good job of that. And we talked about, you know, Ohio State and how Chip Kelly was in his bag, but we also got to circle back to that defense and just what they did to us offensively with just absolutely taking away the run. I mean, for us to have minus 23 yards of rushing, that just puts so much pressure on Dylan Gabriel to make plays downfield and completely change our game plan. I'm sure our game plan was to not throw the ball 41 times, you know, but it also game plan was also not to have Jordan James only have 14 yards rushing.
And right? He didn't leave the game with, you know, an injury and late in that first half and never returned.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, but here's the thing. It doesn't matter if Jordan James is in the game or whoever is.
No.
Hell, Ashton Jensen could have been that game.
Yeah.
If there is nowhere to run the football, you're going to have a long day. And that was a game we have not seen in a very long time from an Oregon team that the offensive line has been the best unit, one of the best units in the country. They've been Joe Moore Award finalists the last two seasons. And it's not like you can say that something is fundamentally wrong with the offensive line,
yeah.
Right? Because of how good they have been over now 2 years with Aleik Terry as the offensive line coach and Mike Kavanaugh and, you know, Ryan Walk and all those guys, the law firm, as they call it, as the offensive line staff. Something isn't fundamentally broken with the way that the players play or the coaches coach. That game it went sideways.
Yeah.
In Ohio State's defensive line, I would love to say front seven, but it was really four.
Yeah, you can't put seven in that bad boy. You know,
they were incredible.
And this is where Oregon fans are showing their frustrations, right? Because at every big moment, where whether it be us playing the SEC or us playing in a big game like this, we have felt outmatched up front.
Yeah.
And finally, we look back, we look at it on paper, we're like, we are here. We have the big boys up front. And
no
we
doubt.
Have talked all year of how we have the big boys up front. And, you know, is were we as outmatched as the numbers show? No, you know, but no. But it is what it, I mean. But if you look at it on paper, it was, right? We got beat up front in the biggest game.
Yeah.
And we got outmatched 8 sacks to 0. We got outmatched to negative 23 rushing yards to their 181, mm-hmm. you know? And so that's where the frustration was, because looking at a 13-0 season, looking at us, the number one team, we could finally say we have made it, right? We have the horses. And then to have a game like this, you feel like you take those steps back. And I don't think that's maybe fair. But just I think everybody's kind of reeling right now
with
loss and you know, I know I was and just hearing from former teammates and it's just like everybody wants to know what happened.
Yeah.
And you know, in the end, what happened is we got our asses kicked and we're going to have to learn from it. And we're going to have to go back to the drawing board and we're going to have to just stay the course. And I know Coach Lanning will do that. You know, he will stay the course and he will, you know, still preach all the same things and we will still develop. And I mean, we still have some unbelievable O-line coaches. We have unbelievable D-line coaches and we have the bodies there. It just, we have to show up in the biggest moment.
And I will say this too about the offensive line, because look, there was time where Dylan Gabriel was back there for a really long time.
Yeah.
And they protected him and they protected him well. On the flip side of, all right, yeah, were there some plays where O-line got beat and that contributed to some of the sacks? 100%. A big factor in that, too, was there was nowhere to throw the football.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because I was sitting in the stands and fans in the stands at times can be just painful to be around, right?
Yeah.
Which is, I'm a fan now, so I'm one of them, right? But just, you know, they are screaming, throw the ball. And I had a great angle. I mean, I was kind of the corner of the end zone. You know, I felt like I saw all the action. There was no one to throw to.
None.
He had no wide receiver. I mean, what do you want to do? Throw it to get a pick? You know, it's like.
I was stunned.
Yeah. The way they covered up our receivers. And, you know, I don't know what happened to Stewart. I know he got dinged in practice leading up to it.
Yeah, so is the lower back in pregame, and you know Dan Lanning said it after the game, like, hey, you know he would want to go out there and he would want to give it a go, but you got to look in his best interest and kind of save the player from himself. So that leads me to believe, and especially in a game of that magnitude, that's an injury that he could have hurt himself worse than had he, you know, not played at all. And so I err on the side of, all right, yeah, the guy really couldn't have played.
Yeah.
And that's not with, you know, any knowledge of he could have gone out there and hurt himself significantly more. But look, in that type of game, in that moment, and he was suited up too on the sideline.
Yeah.
And so that was leading to a little bit more of what is going on here. But yeah, I don't think he makes a 20-point difference, I would say. There, because but if he is healthy, can he get loose and create a little bit more, especially with the amount of attention that was put on Tez? Absolutely, because Trayshon Holden had himself a day.
He did
in the Rose Bowl, but Evan Stewart would have made a little bit of a difference, would have made things a little bit easier. He's not changing the outcome of that game.
No, no. I mean, nothing's changing the outcome of that game. I mean, you know, Coach Lanning is talking about, I didn't get the guys ready. Well, Ohio State was ready, and they had the better players, and it showed all night. I mean, there was no question about it. You know, I mean, you look at that first quarter, for example, when they had 233 yards of offense to our 37. It's like, you know, my buddy who I'm sitting with goes, we're going to give up 900 yards of offense today if we keep this up. And I look up, because I didn't look at it yet, and I was like, yeah, you don't see that very often.
Nope.
You know, from the number one team in the land, it's just that's when the wheels fall off.
Boy, they come off.
They come off hard.
And one thing on their defense and what they did, and I wanted to make sure that Caleb Downs, who was the number one safety in the country in the transfer portal this past year from Alabama, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, he was making plays at the line of scrimmage. He was making plays, breaking up passes downfield. He was everywhere, and he was a menace at every phase of the game. And you got to give Ohio State in their plan a ton of credit, because Jim Knowles, their defensive coordinator, allowed him to play loose and free. And they allowed him to say, all right, if you read run, go be the player we know you are.
Yeah.
We're going to let you play instinctual football. And he did. And he was incredible. But the reality is they asked him to do a whole heck of a lot, because if he guesses wrong, he is out of the play and the Ducks are in the end zone. He was right. He was on point all game long. He played outstanding football in the back end.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about Chip Kelly being in his bag. He was in his bag there. Like, he saw what plays were developing. When you have a safety that can come up and make plays in the line of scrimmage, like you said, and be there in the back end when you need him, I mean, that just kind of shows not only his ability, but his football IQ.
Yep.
And, you know, he obviously watches film, and he knows what was coming, and then the coaches prepared him in the right way where, gosh, yeah, he was – It was hard to watch, but you had to appreciate the way he was playing football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It hurts,
man.
But
it
I respect
hurts.
It.
It hurts. And that's just it. That's what I think all of us Duck fans, you know, we feel your pain, right? Because all anybody wants is a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
And when you feel like you have the team, and you feel, you know, you're only 13-0 team that left, and, you know, we have all we have ever wanted, right? We have a 6-year quarterback that's unbelievable. There was a Heisman Trophy candidate. We have the best O-line we've had in years. We have the best defense we've had in years. And then to lay an egg, I mean, it kind of gives you that hopeless feeling that maybe is not, you know, it's just that we feel that now.
Yeah.
And it's going to get better. Right. But I don't know. I've been going back and forth on this, because I knew obviously we're going to talk about it. And I was just trying to figure out, you know, I'm just talking to buddies and talking to people that I played with and how they all feel. And it's just, that's it, man. Like, it feels like that one that got away.
Yeah.
Right. But it feels like that one that got away in a hurry. Because
yes, it did.
Of the way the game played out. And we'll get more into it of like what we need to do going forward. But I mean, I know I get it, man. I get how people are feeling right now, just based on what we witnessed on Wednesday.
We've talked about this. We've said it a few times. You know, Dan Lanning in his post-game press conference, he stepped up and he owned it. He said, you know, this is on us, this is on the coaches. We need a better job of preparing. One, there is a quote that kind of got legs of its own. It took off running because it was just the response was tweeted out, and I feel like the context matters, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where it was just like people were saying, can you believe this guy? You know, what is Lanning talking about? There was a quote that said, sometimes it's not your day. It wasn't our day today, and it wasn't their day against Michigan. That was the only thing that was tweeted out, you know, and it was just attributed to Dan Lanning, and that's it. There is context there,
yeah.
In that the question that was asked was, why do you think Ohio State struggled the way they did against Michigan? And do you see any significant adjustments they've made since then to get things turned around the way they have? Okay? Lanning's response was, sometimes it's not your day. I think that was us today. It wasn't our day. It wasn't their day against Michigan. But what's unique about college football right now is in this dynamic is that you've got to be playing your best ball at the end. I think anybody watching Ohio State recognizes they're playing really good football. That sure sounds a whole lot different than just a raw quote of Dan Lanning in the post-game press conference saying, sometimes it's not your day, it wasn't our day today, and it wasn't their day against Michigan. That we do get lost in, you know, 240 characters or whatever it is on Twitter. And, you know, sometimes we don't get that full context coming through over and over again. Well, that context matters. And, you know, I know that Coach Lanning is getting right through the coals over it. He owned that loss, and people are trying to discredit, you know, what he said prior to or after that comment. But I was sitting there going, whoa, he's taking all the blame off the guys, not trying to deflect.
That's why people are losing faith in, you know, media today, right? Is because people take quotes like that and completely spin them just to get clicks or to get more people involved. I mean, context is everything.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at that quote makes absolute sense, right? But if you take a snippet of it and did what he did for that quote, it sounds a little ridiculous.
It does. Right? It does.
So that's just why I can't stand that stuff, man. Like, you know, just put it all out there. If you're going to give him a quote, and especially if you do that intentionally, you know, knowing that it's going to be something that people are going to be a talking point, like, let's get the whole thing.
Let's get it all out there.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, I don't know, man. That's another thing they all go into. Like, Dan Lanning, this is his third year as head coach, right? And people think that the world's coming to an end after going 13-1 as a third-year head coach that has two of his recruiting classes in here. I mean, I don't know. I was just trying to look it up. Like, how long did it take Kirby Smart, who everybody thinks is, like, you know, the man in college football now that's winning these national championships? I don't, you know, it probably took him a few years to get his recruits in there.
It took Kirby Smart 6 years.
Yeah.
Took Nick Saban 10.
Yeah. So, like, let's take a step back here and think about, you know, we talked about how we got to stack up these recruiting classes. That's what it takes. Let's stack up. Well, we've stacked up two. You know, like, let's stack up another one. Let's, you know, let's see how this develops. Let's stick to the game plan here of what it takes. Because, yeah, I know we're in a world we want it now, you know, and especially with the recruiting and the way it is and the portal and you bring all these new guys in. But you know what? This is still year three for him. And next year we're going to be even better because every single year he's bringing more and more of his guys in and he's bringing more and more of his mentality in, and then things will start to change.
I think that is a really important thing because of the fact that we want it and we want it now.
Yeah.
But there is something that, you know, it takes a little bit of humbling, especially when you are a hot young coach that everybody is talking about and you create a lot of buzz yourself. And look, yep. Lanning does. He knows that. He'd be the first person, you know, to tell you that. Yeah. Like, winning, it puts a target on you.
Yeah.
And at this point, going 13-0 in year three, this was a big kick in the gut, right? And this was a massive, and it's not a step back. And I think that's what people need to, you know, say, year being a failure. No. Yep. Like, two things can be true. Does it not sit well with you? And do you feel unsatisfied? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is it a failure? It can still not be a failure too. I will say that, you know, it feels closer to a failure than a success because heading into the year, how many times did we hear this at the beginning of the year when we were talking to players, right? When they were saying, you know, we came here to win a national championship.
Yeah.
Like, we want to be a part of a national championship. And that they didn't shy away from that. They knew that the roster was going to be good enough to compete at the highest level, to go 13-0 and be the number one overall seed. They didn't get there, right? And that doesn't mean your season is a failure. But at the same time, it's not like this overarching success, woo, let's wave the pom-poms. The reality is they went 13-0. They won the Big Ten the first year in the Big Ten, win a perfect record in the Big Ten. They beat two of the final four teams that are remaining in the college football playoff, including the one that beat you.
Yeah.
You beat Ohio State and Penn State. They're both standing and very easily could be the national championship game, right? That's a good year. That is a very good year.
Yeah.
But when you sit there and the program talks about national title aspirations, which I think as every fan, you'd probably want your program to be talking about that, and that being the ultimate goal. It's not a failure.
We just ran into an absolute buzzsaw in Pasadena.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the thing, right? It's,
yeah.
You know, if everything, if we were flipped around and maybe the rankings were different, I mean, would we still gotten rolled by Ohio State maybe in the finals? Sure. Who knows? Right? I mean, who knows how it would have played out, but we would not have had the time off.
Let's talk about that. I know we were
the ones talking about it too. Like, hey, this is the advantage to have the time off. Yeah. Well, you know, I guess looking at the numbers, maybe there's something to not having that much time off.
We will discuss the college football playoff, the format, right after this.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Oregon Ducks were the number one overall seed. They get a first-round bye. They get over 20 days in between the Big Ten Championship and their first matchup in the college football playoff. Rest versus rust. Let's go into this because you and I both were on the side of if you can get the bye, get the dang bye.
Get the bye, yeah.
All four teams that got the first round bye are now out of the college football playoff.
Yeah.
I still do not think that it is a situation where you do not want the bye if you can earn the bye. I believe that. This year, the way the playoff is formatted, I think that it was a product of Oregon ran into an absolute hot team at the wrong time, and it might be the best team in all of college football. I think a couple of the teams that got byes, actually, I think all three of them, if we were to talk about this being last year, remember Florida State when they lost their quarterback? They were left out of a four-team playoff.
Yeah.
You know? Georgia lost their starting quarterback in an offense that was struggling, and they got the number two overall seed. Okay? Boise State and Arizona State, I don't think that anybody without a clear bias towards Arizona State or Boise State would have told you those are two of the four best teams in the country, which are the ones that should be afforded the bias, right? I think that all of those things happen, and if they can fix the format of the college football playoff, I think it does make more sense, and you should see an advantage of getting a bye instead of it being an inherent disadvantage.
Yeah, and the thing is too is not only did they all got beat, but they all got jumped on early. You know, I think Texas was up 17-0 at one point. They, you know, got a lot closer than that. Penn State was up 14-0 in a hurry and about to be 21-0, but I think Boise State got the ball back and made it a little bit more interesting going into half. And then Oregon obviously was down 31-0 at one point.
Yeah.
And so it's just, you could, gosh, you know, that time off, you know, I know we're circling back a little bit now and talking about how there was maybe a big disadvantage of that, but it's all there, and it's the structure of the deal, right? A couple of things I love about college football now that have, you know, made such a positive impact is Pat McAfee and Nick Saban. I like listening to those guys talk, right? And you know, and Nick Saban he has his jokes, right? It's kind of his dad jokes, but he was saying, he goes, if I was an Oregon fan and I was an internet guy, I would be the loudest guy in my mom's basement complaining about what happened to them, being the number one seed and having to play Ohio State in the first round is ridiculous, right? It's almost as ridiculous as Arizona State getting a first round bye. You know, I mean, it was a close game, sure. But did they deserve the 4 seed? No. You know, the reason why Georgia is the number 2 seed is they couldn't jump them over Boise State or Arizona State, right? I mean, maybe if they redrew it the right way, they would have, you know, Penn State would have jumped them, or, you know, Ohio State would have been ahead of them.
Yeah.
You know, all those things could have been the case, but they couldn't do that based on the structure they were given. And so I hope there are some adults in the room that say, listen, this 12-team playoff round, you know, first year has been an absolute bust.
It really has been.
You know, we have not had it. We've had one good game this entire time, and that was Texas Arizona State that got brought down to the end, you know, with controversy. And that was the only close game of all of it. So, I mean, I think they're just praying that Texas, Ohio State, or Penn State, Notre Dame turn into good games, because that's what they need right now. They need something to save this, because year one has been brutal.
It really has been.
And I don't know where to go from here except completely blow up the entire structure, still take the 12 teams, you know, I think we talked about last time, right? Give the champions at least a home game.
If you don't get a bye, you get a home game.
But certainly not just throw them in to the top four.
Yeah, and now that the SEC has chimed in on it, I think there's going to get a little bit of momentum moving towards it. Because even the SEC knows that their best shot, especially in the wake of the Carson Beck injury at Georgia, was Texas, right? Yeah. And they wanted to get them all the advantages that they possibly could. Now, their draw was Clemson and then Arizona State, which I think is... I don't know if... there's a team in the college football playoff that would have had a tougher draw outside of Ohio State themselves, who plays Tennessee, then Oregon, now Texas, and then whomever they play, either Notre Dame or Penn State in the national title game. That's a really tough draw for the number one overall seed. And I think that when the national writers are talking about it, when conference commissioners are talking about it, that is where you get the ball moving forward in favor of a dramatic change far too early in the process of the college football playoff. Because at this point, who wants to be the number one seed to head into next year?
And the SEC is reeling a little bit because of, I mean, they're in the top four with a team that just came to them, right? But the thing about the SEC that I think we're realizing that has been the most affected by is the portal.
Yeah.
Because you look at a team like Alabama or Georgia, I mean, in what world 3 years ago, 4 years ago, would they have not had a five-star freak show quarterback backup that they could just put right in? Yeah. I mean, we saw it with Alabama, right? When they had three NFL quarterbacks in their room, you know, and they replaced one with the other, right? And it's just like with the portal now, those guys aren't sticking around. They want to play now. And that showed in a big way when you think about Georgia, who's had the number one recruiting class for how many straight years, doesn't have a backup quarterback that can score more than 10 points against Notre Dame. I mean, that right there kind of shows where we are in the world of college football.
Yep, and now you look at it, and this is where Oregon's attention is turning towards. All right, where do you improve right now? Signing day for high school is on December 4th. Now you have guys that are entering the transfer portal. There were even guys, this is such a weird year in the world of college football, because guys who were in the portal, who were signing and in high school and signed on December 4th, they were playing or they were practicing for Oregon leading up to the Rose Bowl, right? And, you know, one of them being, you know, Purdue safety Dylan Thienemann, who couldn't play in the game, but you could come and practice. Another one being Jaren Sagapolutele, the five-star quarterback that Oregon flipped from Cal on signing day. He ends up coming and practicing for Oregon and then leaves the program immediately after the Rose Bowl. It's such a weird time in college football.
I don't know why I get so angry about these things, but I do now, you know, because maybe it's just that old man in me. But, man, I had a group text going with some of my former teammates about this particular topic about the Cal kid, or I could call him the Cal kid, you know, because he was...
He was committed to Cal, there, and then
right?
signed
but
up to Oregon.
To come to Oregon when he should still be enjoying his Christmas break as a high school senior, right? And to be practicing in bowl games, and then you hear things like he didn't feel like he was a priority in the quarterback room when you had a team preparing for the Rose Bowl that you're not even eligible to play in.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this kid, I was, you know, like I said, my buddies were going absolutely nuts on the fact of, you know, we always would kind of just text, like, this is where we are in college football. Like, this is the world we live in. The kids can literally come for a month, not like it, not feel like they're loved like they were in high school, and just it's going to create the softest players that you could. I mean, oh gosh.
I think what it's not necessarily the player, but it's a product of the system too, right? And look, I think that, you know, in any of this, I like the portal because there are so many guys that get to a place and they say, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Yep.
This isn't the fit for me. This is not right. And the portal is great for that. And just being like, hey, I want out. And look, there is a part of me that I credit him for realizing that really quickly. Like, nope, made a mistake. I'm out. Right? And that is okay. But some of the quotes that do come out when guys like the when guys do transfer and it's so quickly, you're going, kind of makes you cock your head to the side and go, huh? The reality of it is that I think you and I are in the same boat here. I think that a lot of these high school kids should enjoy their senior years of high school,
absolutely,
still be in high school and not go from playing in, you know, the high school playoffs earlier in the month to going and practicing for a team that's, you know, competing for a national title.
Yeah, this whole graduating early thing and showing up early, you know, I don't get it. You know, I think they should enjoy their senior year of high school. They should do it the right way. They should come in as ready as they can be, you know, after going through the whole process. Like, what is the rush? You're going to have 5 years. You're going to be working your ass off the whole time. You're going to be grinding away. It's just like with spring ball. Like, people would, I went through one spring ball out of four. You know, people forget about spring ball the day after spring ball is over. Like, they put all this hype about the spring game. It's like, no one gives anything about the spring game, right? It's just an opportunity for the coaches to have you for a month and work your ass off. You get a little bit ahead, but afterwards it's over.
And it's when the vets get surgery.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I had three surgeries in that time. You know, it's so when these kids are there, when they should be enjoying, I don't know, prom, like let's think about that kind of stuff right now instead of, you know, oh, it's not the right fit. I don't feel loved by these quarterback coaches. You know, I hate to give this kid because he's just a kid,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
but it's the system is absolutely broken because I liked the portal when it was one year because it changed recruiting, right? You recruit a kid out of the portal, you know he's yours, right? You give him one shot. Like, hey, it didn't work. But for now, these kids are going to go to 3-4 schools in 4 years. Like, give me a break.
There is something to going through a struggle.
Yeah.
Right? And learning about yourself and fighting through some stuff when you go through those sorts of struggles. And I'm with you on that. I think that there is value in it. And at this point, though, there's nothing the NCAA can do.
And I think that I'm a little sensitive to this, I think, just because I went through that struggle, right? And, you know, I came to Oregon. You know, my dad, when I left, was super sick. And I leave home, and it's only 2 hours. But when you're playing college football, you might as well be 10 hours away,
yeah.
Right? And I'm all of a sudden in the grind of football. You know, I'm missing home. I'm homesick. I have my dad has not that much time to live, right? And I just started, you know, I started struggling.
Yeah.
And I wanted to leave, to the point where I went to Coach Bilotti, and I said, I think I have to leave. Like, I am so unhappy. You know, every day I woke up and I was struggling. And you know what he did? He looked at me and said, "You're not going anywhere." And I said, "Okay." I walked out of his office and I figured it out, right? Yep. And I was like, I remember walking out of his office, and I go to my dorm, and I'm just kind of sitting there feeling sorry for myself because I was just in such a struggle. And I just like, I got to figure it out, you know?
Yeah.
I have to just figure out a way. And, you know, that was kind of when my brother called. He said, "Man, go hang out with the old lineman." Like, go. And that's what I did. I walked to Jeff Kendall's dorm and those guys. And I just like, you know, just because I tried to put all this stuff behind me. Right. And I started to dive in to what the struggle meant to me or what I wanted to get out of it. Right. And I still had my father at home that was sick. And, you know, eventually in my freshman year, he ended up passing away. But he wouldn't have wanted me to come home,
right?
You know, and he would not have wanted me. So that's what I think. That's why, like, you hear me getting all fired up about this portal thing, about guys jumping, is because, you know, I feel like I look at my life. If I would have left, or if Bilotti would have said, "Yeah, go ahead and leave," like, I don't know what would have happened. Like, I have some of my absolute best friends to this day. You know, I just hung out with two of them last night, right? That just like are like brothers to me that I literally grew up with. And but you know what? That whole struggle that I was with, you know, like, you talk about the struggles of like losing a father and going through these times, like, some of my biggest supporters are my teammates that were like lived it with
yeah.
me. Like, when I was going through it all, you know, it was my buddy Jeff Kendall, who was my roommate, that I was just like, he was my support group, right? And that's what I needed. And that's where you learn about yourself. And that's where I grew as a person, to the point where, you know, I know I'm getting on my soapbox here,
but
it's just like, that's what some of these kids need.
No,
right?
You absolutely do.
Yeah.
For the betterment of themselves, because nobody else is going to make them do that, right?
Yeah.
And like you, that's why I said, like, you learn really valuable lessons about who you are, and it changes who you're going to be. Now, I have this question, because I know that for you, it worked out and it was incredible for you individually. I know I've seen it, but you probably saw it too, where somebody was going through that same thing. They went to Coach Bilotti, or, you know, when I was in school, right? They would go to coach and they would have that same conversation that you had. And he says, "You're not going anywhere."
Yeah.
And they go, "Well, F you," right? "No, I want to leave." And they say, "No, it'll be better for you if you stay." And then that person just, whether they self-destruct or they start making fractures in the locker room because they truly aren't happy and they don't have anywhere to go, and they become, you know, a cancer in the locker room, right? I saw that. I don't know if you ever saw guys that were like that. I still think coaches are still saying the exact same thing that Coach Bilotti said.
Yeah.
"You're not going anywhere." But now those guys can be like, well, there's a lot of them that will go, okay, and do it exactly what you did, right? Mm-hmm. And say, nope, they're telling me I'm not going anywhere. Yeah. This does give them the avenue, though, so the guys who would just drag the whole thing down, and by that I mean the entire locker room down, they do have an avenue to go somewhere else.
Yeah, and it becomes a different type of struggle.
Sure.
Right? Because if they do leave, then they're like, then before they didn't have any options, right? Because you had to sit out a year, or if you went to the same Pac-12 or Pac-10, you had to sit out 2 years, and then they'd go to a JUCO, and they would start a whole new set of struggles. You don't think you're supported at a Division I school? You take yourself to JUCO, and talk about just an absolute,
go watch Last Chance U.
Yeah, exactly. They don't talk about people that don't care about you, right? They're just bringing you in and sending you off. Like, you know, they care about how many people they could place at Division I schools. They still want to win, but it's a different type of struggle. And so, you know, there is some value to the portal, but the way the state of college football, and I, you know, we talked to Wilcox last time, and he that was one of the things. He's like, just so you know, if we get going on the state of college football, we may never end this podcast. You know, and so I think he'd probably be a good one. If we had a headset on him this whole time, he would just be, you know, I might be screaming from the rooftops. He might be screaming as well. But yeah, it's different, man.
A
crazy time, man. It's a crazy time. And listen, that the kid that left after a month, he probably looked at that quarterback room, and not only did he feel loved, but he felt like he was amongst some dudes.
Yeah.
Because there's some talent in that room.
It's deep. It's deep. It's deep. Dante Moore, Austin Novosad, Luke Moga, Akili Smith Jr., who has an, and I don't know if anybody saw him. My goodness. He is enormous. Like, I'm going, like, that kid should be in high school.
Yeah, he should.
And I'm sitting there going, I don't know how anybody in high school tackled you.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. You get used to what you're used to, right? And we sometimes don't see guys like him, you know, those big time recruit, D1 recruit quarterbacks come out of Oregon.
No.
And he is certainly one of them. So, yeah, man,
look,
we could talk about this all day.
And this is good. This is going to be an interesting time for Oregon fans, though, because of the fact that there's portal open, there's another signing day where things are going to be ramping up, and then before you know it, we're back to spring ball.
Yeah.
We are back to spring ball.
And everybody cares about spring ball.
You made that known.
Yeah.
And one thing that we need to make known is never apologize for you getting on their soapbox. That was amazing. I can't believe it took us over 20 episodes to get you on one.
Oh, man. I think it was something set me off. And maybe it was just the idea of that month. Can we even call it a month? Was he there a month? I don't know.
No.
You know, and, you know, I think it's a little easier to maybe get on these kids a little bit more because – you know, it's a little more business.
Oh yeah.
You know, and then like, it's like what the people used to say, hey, you can't get on these kids because they're out here, you know, they're not getting paid to do this. They're doing it for the love of the game. That's not the case anymore. No. These kids are well compensated.
They are, but they're also still kids. And that's why I go with I'm never going to go and attack them because if you make them, how many dumb choices did you make when you were young, right? This is a very large decision that they're having to make. Mm-hmm. And look, they may get to a place and be like, nope, not for me.
Yeah, and he's going to be fine. He's going to last in the portal for as long as he wants to last in the portal. And there's going to be a ton of teams going and plucking him out of there and giving him all kinds of money. And hopefully he feels supported and loved in that quarterback room.
Hopefully he does something that Dante Moore did, right?
Yeah.
Look at Dante Moore. He went down to UCLA, and he said, nope, not for me. And he took a hit to his pride, and he came and he said, I know I'm going to be backing up Dylan Gabriel. And he sat for a year, and he got to learn, grow, redshirt, and that's a big step forward individually.
Yeah.
For somebody to acknowledge and do that, and now you're looking at it and saying, hey, hopefully he's the guy of the future moving forward for the Oregon Ducks.
Yeah, that's what encouraged me most about Moore. I mean, I know he's a five-star guy, and I know how talented he can be, but just the process in which he started as a freshman, he took his absolute lumps at UCLA, and then he exactly what you said, man. He's like, I'm going to go to Oregon. I'm going to go get coached by a great coach. I'm going to go learn from behind a great quarterback. And then when it's my time, you know, I'm going to hopefully show up. And, you know, we get all fingers crossed, us Oregon fans all over the place, is that he is our guy next year. I mean, obviously, I don't think if he doesn't win the starting spot, he's long gone. But he is somebody that...
That's part of the business now.
Yeah, absolutely. And no one would fault him, nope. You know, because he put in his year. And not many guys would do that.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm encouraged by what our quarterback future is.
We will be back. Look, we're not cutting out the interviews and just stopping doing interviews. We just needed, I thought this week would be one where you could just exhale,
yeah.
Get it all out, and then we're going to move forward and we're going to continue to give you the interviews of the players and personalities from around the Oregon program that you guys want to hear from. But this one was one we just needed to vent. Cole needed a soapbox he didn't even know he needed before this show started.
It wasn't even about the Rose Bowl, which, you know, and I got to say, just talking about the Rose Bowl experience, you know, I know people talk about how it's the experience of being at your couch with, you know, close to a cooler and all these things is so great. Like, I got to say, regardless of the game, the experience of the Rose Bowl and just being in Pasadena,
it's
and
amazing.
All the history, having a B-2 bomber to have a flyover, yeah. You know, just kind of, you know, it was 50-50. I'm going to say 50-50. Oregon, Ohio State. I mean, just the excitement throughout the stadium. It was a special, special day leading up.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, the game ended the way it did, or throughout the whole game, and that obviously had something to do with the overall experience. But man, Oregon fans got to remember, the sun's going to come up tomorrow, maybe not in Oregon, but it's going to, you know,
light up the clouds.
Life is still good to be an Oregon Duck.
Yeah,
you know, we're reeling a little bit right now, but the future is bright. We have the things in place that are going to be successful. Like, we are in a good place moving forward. We're not taking a ton of steps back here. You know, we got punched in the face.
Yeah.
And we're going to get back up, and we're going to do all the, you know, we can't, how many more coach analogies can I give you right now that are going to make us feel better? But it's going to be all right. And I look forward to next year, and I look forward to the off season and, you know, learning more about the process and getting to know, hopefully bringing you guys a ton of interviews of just the insides and outs of more stories. And this has been a fun year to do this podcast, you know, through all these games.
Keep spreading the word too.
Yeah.
Keep spreading the word of the program. We're out here. We're just trying to hoof it ourselves. So thank you all for listening for this entire season. It sucks that it had to come to an end, but, Coach Linehan has got so many more coach analogies that yeah. he can get out there.
Oh,
I think,
man,
there is one other one too that we can all agree on. There's a lot of fan bases taking victory laps over Oregon.
Yeah,
that just tells you they're thinking about Oregon.
Yeah,
right. Like that. That's the one where, you know, remember when it used to be nobody cares. Yeah. Nobody cares about Oregon.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
People care now when you lose. That's how you know you're a big program.
Yes.
All
yes.
right.
And then, you know, I think that we have the guys on the coaching staff that are going to use this as an opportunity to fuel them.
Learn and grow, baby.
Yep.
Learn and grow.
Yep.
All right. That does it for us this week. We'll talk to you next week. For Cole Linehan, I'm Dusty Hera. This has been The Program.
Go Ducks.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.